Hi, this is Dr. Sherry Johnson, and you're listening to The Common Sense Doctor. And today, this podcast is concerning COVID-19. It's more of an informative podcast, kind of like, what is it? Why are we seeing people get it? How can we help ourselves? What do we need to look forward to in the future? What's current research and testing being done? Now, I have taken a slight hiatus on my podcast because in my clinic, I was doing a group 10-day blood sugar cleanse. And in this cleanse, I've got really, really positive results where I had people reduce their A1Cs. I've had people actually get off their diabetic medication that they were taking. People that had swelling in the hands and the feet and the ankles, and they couldn't figure out why they're swollen, went to the doctor, nobody could figure it out. The swelling completely gone. People were sleeping better. They felt better. Memory was getting better. And we had a really awesome positive result that I was going to do a podcast on that and end up doing another group 10-day blood sugar cleanse, and then COV started. Now, you're probably thinking, well, why are you throwing this information out? But the reason I'm throwing the information out about our blood sugar cleanse is because it does relate to this topic. And the reason a lot of people were getting good results is because we were reducing inflammation. And at this point, we're starting to find out that a lot of patients or people who are having severe side effects from this virus are usually people who have high inflammation in their body. And if you really think about it, I don't want to go over the list of people who are susceptible to this virus because you should know it by now. It's been going on for about a month. But for example, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, if you've listened to my podcast about blood pressure, why I'm not a big fan of blood pressure medication as a permanent thing, that's your first sign that you have high inflammation in the body. There's something in the body that's not working right, and it's allowing inflammation to come in. And when you have that and you don't get rid of it or you don't control it, and blood pressure medication does not control that. It does not stop that inflammation. It's coming from somewhere else that you have to figure out. This is why these people are susceptible to this virus, because there's this cascading effect when it attacks the body, which I will explain in this podcast. But one of the other things that most people do not understand that are being attacked by this is obesity. Obesity is a humongous factor in why people may be having symptoms or being affected by COV. Because the reason I keep saying being affected is there are a lot of people that have been tested for this virus but have no symptoms whatsoever. And that means their body is strong enough. It doesn't have a lot of factors that's making it weak for the immune system, and therefore their natural immune system can fight this. So you're thinking, well, what does obesity have to do with that? And if you've listened to my past podcasts, especially in weight loss and other inflammatory blood sugar, et cetera, your fat cells are inflammation. Period. They're just a ball of inflammation that holds toxins, holds toxic chemicals, holds excess hormones, and they lead to inflammation in the body. Therefore, people who are overweight will start noticing they have achy joints, and it is due to the pressure of the weights on the joints, but also these fat cells produces a lot of inflammation and toxins. So we were trying to encourage people that you really need to stop sitting there and eating junk food. I had just watched a news program where they said that the, you know, M&Ms and the potato chips and the snack foods is what they call it, are on a rise of being purchased. And that's because people are sitting around and buying those junk foods, snack foods, comfort foods. And boy, you're just asking for more trouble. So what I wanted to do in this podcast is try to explain what COV is, what it means, what's going on with it, what we can do to try to prevent it and prevent further reinfestation or infection because they're suspecting this. So remember this. I want you to know that legally, I am not telling you how to treat. I'm not telling you how to prevent. I'm not telling you how to cure from COV. All I'm doing is giving the current information that I've gotten in research and current studies that show herbs, supplements, food that helps rebuild the immune system and fight it off. And current research that's being done on COV trials to see if they can reduce the symptoms and reverse the side effects of it. So let's start with what COV means. CO means corona, which is a strain of the virus. So there is a coronavirus that's out there. So there's just different strains. V means virus, and 19 is the year that it started. So a lot of people try to say it's the same as the flu, it's the same as SARS. It is a SARS, but it's a different form. It's altered differently, and it started in 2019. To let you know the difference, a seasonal flu has an RNA and a DNA chain, and it's recognized by humans. All right, but the COV originally came from an animal and transmitted into a human. So therefore, it has a different RNA, which is a ribonucleic acid. And now we're getting into chemistry, which I don't want to go deep, but that's where we're having this transition problem. And then what happened is when it went from animal to human, it kind of changed and it started passing from human to human. And that's where you're hearing the word it's mutating. Viruses naturally mutate because, you know, it kind of just wants to survive. But it's really mutating because it's going from different strains or forms. Now, anyone knows that we have the different symptoms. And I just want to mention that 10% of the patients that have symptoms do have mild GI symptoms before the respiratory symptoms. And a lot of them had diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, and abdominal discomfort before the onset of those respiratory symptoms. And some of them also even had headaches with this. So 23% of the patients were tested negative in respiratory symptoms, but then they tested positive for the coronavirus in fecal samples. This is going to be very interesting because we're going to find out, I think, coming up, that it doesn't just affect the lungs, but it affects the GI symptoms. And we're starting to see there's a correlation between your gut and your lung and the communication of it, and that this might be coming through gut as well. Now, this is kind of a theory. This is based on some of the sampling we're getting, some of the testing. Remember, this is kind of new. We don't have a lot of people that have recovered. So, and our testing, we're starting to learn a little bit about. So these are some of the little bits and pieces of information that we're getting that I want to relay back to you. It may change in 30 days. We find something different the more we have people recover. Why I want to explain that to you is because we're going to kind of talk about the prevention and the transmission. And if we're starting to see this in fecal matter, coronavirus there, then we've got to start looking at maybe our diet and maybe why some of these people with diabetes, obesity, hypertension, it's not just inflammation in the body, but it's how our gut, which is our first line of defense, you know, against all this. And if you remember, go back to one of my podcasts where I talk about dysbiosis and digestion and my colostrum podcast, because I talk about these factors called IgA. Ig are your immunoglobulins. They're your first line of defense. They are your immune system. You get them originally from breast milk. Our IgA is our first warriors, our first soldiers. They start in the mouth, around the respiratory system. They go down the esophagus and digestion. And so we're thinking there might be a link in there. And that's why if you don't have enough IgA in the mouth because you have a really bad gut, you're not going to have that first line of defense in the upper respiratory and sputum area, spit. And therefore, it's going to travel down. And then you hope that when it gets in the gut, you have enough IgA factors there that prevents it from leaking into the blood system. But if you don't, then it leaks. and now we've got Havoc. So I'm trying to put a concept in your head. I want you to think of that. Now, going back to people who are susceptible to this, we know the basic causes, but doctors are now finding out that most who are in their severe cases and need hospitalization have a BMI over 26. Now, I'm not going to talk about BMI. You could go Google it. You can find out your own BMI. There's a formula. But if you Google it and you find out your own BMI and you are over 26, they're linking this to being susceptible to the virus at the point that you need hospitalization or you have a severe case. Not everybody. Remember, you can be tiny and you have a low BMI, but you have a lot of inflammation in the body. So look at that right there. But BMI is usually an indicator of obesity, and obesity causes inflammation. And so though, therefore, you may not have one of these chronic diseases, but and I've heard this on the news where they said, I'm healthy, I don't have this, I don't have that, I'm a healthy person, but I noticed that they're overweight. That's why you got it. That's what they're linking that to. Now, I can't guarantee it. They might find a different study, but that's right now what they're seeing. So 60% of adults in America have at least one underlying health condition, and obesity is the top. And that is scary right there. And I do see that. And if you look at a map, again, go on Google, and you can look at a map where you say the map of the United States obesity, and start with the 1800s, go to 1920s, 1950s, 1980s, 2000s, and you will see the growth of how our BMI and our obesity has spread through the nation. And so you really kind of need to do that on your own because, hey, what else are you doing? So I'm trying to get you guys to understand this because I think people have this false sense of security that it's just a low immune system. But what I think you're going to see in the future is this is going to change everybody, not just from wearing masks and gloves and not shaking hands. But what you're going to have to notice is that insurance companies and health, quote unquote, prevention is not real preventative medicine. Going to get your blood pressure checked and then giving you a blood pressure pill is not preventative. You're going to find out that preventive medicine is actually no longer eating the M&Ms and the junk food. Understanding quality of food and what food does for you. And I'm going to go back to that 10-day blood sugar cleanse. You know, when I had that class, in that class, I teach them about inflammation. And I teach them how a lot sugar causes inflammation, which I'm about to go in this podcast, calling it cytokines. These white blood cells called cytokines are what's inflammation. And the sugar that you consume and the high-carb diets and the refined products lead to more cytokine and inflammation. And as you have more of those, you get the swelling in the hands and the feet. You get the pre-diabetic symptoms. You get the insomnia issues. You get the skin conditions. You get the allergies. You get all these things that are related to inflammation. And when these people in just 10 days could notice a significant change in their health, in just 10 days, that is what is preventative care. Preventative care is teaching you guys what are good foods and what are bad foods, and why are some foods good and why are some food bad. And I don't really like to use good and bad food. I like to say what food is good to do in high quantities and what food is good to do in low quantities. I mean, let's get for real. I'm not going to not eat a birthday cake on a birthday party. I mean, I love cake just like anybody else. But my gosh, there are some people who the size of the cake is insane. They eat cake every day. That's what we're trying to teach you. And it's not just cake. I want people to know that. But it's actually, we overconsume fruit. And that was one of the things in my blood sugar cleanse that I was trying to teach you guys, is that fruit's great, but eating too much can lead to this. And so I'm hoping I can give you my PowerPoint presentation on that for y'all to understand. But But that's why I led with the 10-day blood sugar cleanse, because I'm showing you that medicine has to change. It's got to stop being a quick pill for a symptom, but it's got to be a lifestyle change. And this right here is going to be the deciding factor, because if you notice, we don't have a pill for this virus. We don't have a vaccine. We don't have a cure. So I want to go over some other things that are signs and symptoms that they're noticing now before you get the upper respiratory symptom. Another one that they found is people had lost the sense of taste and smell. And they did that before they had the respiratory symptoms. Now, I got it. We're in the South. We have a lot of sinus issues. We have a lot of allergies. But when you lose taste and smell together, it lets you know that this virus is now attacking the central nervous system. And this can be a pretty good indicator that you're going to have these severe cases. So that's another thing that we need to look at. All right, now let's go into what the coronavirus is. It is a live virus. It can replicate. And one of the seminars I had taken concerning this was a doctor from Johns Hopkins had said, the coronavirus, and I like this quote, it's like a guy who breaks in your house, he eats your food, he destroys your furniture, he has 10,000 babies, and then he leaves your homes trashed. Okay, this is where I'm talking about these cascading symptoms. That's what's happening. The virus is coming in. It really doesn't want to sit and live there. It just wants to destroy everything, make a whole bunch of other babies to do the same thing, and then just head out and go on to the next person. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to prevent this from coming in. And also, we got to make our home stronger. And that's what your immune system's about. So one of the things that I want to explain about this virus is it has these protein spikes. So when you look at the pictures on it, it has these little red things sticking out. Those are spikes. And what they do is they attach to our cell membranes. The problem is they're attaching and they're really sticky. I like the word you use, sticky, 10 times more than a typical virus. That's why we're having a little bit of difficulty with it. And what's interesting is they found that what it's doing is it's affecting an enzyme called furin. And therefore, when it stops this furin enzymes, which there's this enzyme is on a lot of organs. It's on a lot of cells in our body. And cells are all over the place. And you have cells for the liver. And you have certain cells for the lungs. And you have certain cells for your muscle. So every cell structure is just slightly a little different for the area of the body. And the problem is there's this enzyme called furin that allows this receptor for them to attach. And they're finding that this enzyme is on other organs. And so when these people get sick, this is the point where you're finding it's not just upper respiratory problems that they're having. It's not the breathing problems, but they're starting to see that it's shutting down other organs. And remember, I talked about taste and smell, the central nervous system. And that's what we're having to look at, is what it's doing and why it's attacking everything. So we know it attaches the cell. It is trying to replicate itself. But this virus also causes an inflammation storm. And remember I said inflammation is cytokines. Cytokines is actually a protective mechanism in our body. That's why I'm not a big fan of people taking a lot of anti-inflammatories. And the reason why I tell them is the reason you're having inflammation is it's a first line of defense for the body. It says something's broken, something's damaged, something's foreign. I'm going to bring in these proteins called cytokines to kind of cover the area, kind of encase it until I can get these other white blood cells that actually kill and eat, which are macrophages and neutrophils. These are other white blood cells that come and they kill and they eat it, and then they get rid of it. And that's kind of what inflammation is there for, to be honest with you guys. And so when you have inflammation, I try to tell people, try not to take an anti-inflammatory. Try to support that immune system, because it's really protecting you. And once you just stop what you're doing, stop overrunning, stop over-exercising, stop working, slow down, give the body a rest so it can take all that energy, use it for those neutrophils and macrophages, and attack that inflammation. So whatever is attacking the body, we can get rid of it. Does that make a little bit more sense? I mean, there's a time when anti-inflammatories are good and there's a time when we overuse them. That is another reason why those NSAIDs like ibuprofen, they found that it actually made the virus exponential, okay, because of this cytokine mechanism. So what it's going to do is it's going to tell the immune system to send out those macrophages and the neutrophils, and that's going to, when they start eating up what's bad, what's wrong, it's going to reduce the inflammation. Got it? So cytokines are really important. And what I think you're going to hear in the future is this virus causes something called a cytokine storm. So I want you to relate, cytokine is the same thing as inflammation. Inflammation's layman's term, cytokine is medical term. Now, the main problem with COVID-19 is it causes this cascading inflammatory response, inducing vascular, or we're going to say blood inflammation. And this blood inflammation is inflammation through the whole vascular system, which can go into the heart. And if you already have inflammation in the vascular system, such as cardiovascular disease, hypertension, autoimmune conditions, pulmonary diseases, this is what's going to make it worse. So bottom line, it's the inflammation in the body that we already have on top of the inflammation that this virus causes is what's leading to the breakdown of the body. And that's why these disorders, these people with these disorders are already autoimmune deficiencies are being affected. And think about it. This is why older people are being affected. If you're older and you're not healthy and you're on 25 different medications, this is why you're susceptible, because your body is already riddled with inflammation. And then on top of this, we have this virus that causes more inflammation. Does that kind of make sense? So our goal is start eating more of a anti-inflammatory diet. And that's kind of where I'm going to push y'all towards supplements, because that's really what everybody is concerned about. But I want to break it down so you don't think it's just the virus and the flu. Now, mind you, if you start eating an anti-inflammatory diet and living an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, you are going to start noticing all around colds, flus, pneumonias, bronchitis, allergies, sinus problems, etc., are going to reduce drastically. Okay, so we got it. Inflammation is pretty much the primary cause for us having these severe reactions to COV versus people who have COV and they don't have any symptoms at all. That should be very easy for you to understand. Okay, I have some of these symptoms. My BMI was over 26. Heck, I think my BMI is over 26 after the isolation, but I need to start eating healthy. I need to start reducing my inflammation. I need to start taking care and taking ownership of my own health and stop relying on someone to make a quick drug for it, because it may or may not happen. So what can I do? Well, what they're finding out right now in clinical trials with patients in New York, they are having certain hospitals that have grants that can do research study. And one of them is doing 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously 3 times a day, and they're seeing really good results for these COVID-19 patients. Now, I want to let you know that this vitamin C therapy has been used multiple times in research. This is not something brand new. They're trying it with this virus, but it has been used in the past for SARS. It has been used in the past for pneumonia. And it's been used in the past for influenza. And all of these studies have gotten phenomenal results of where these viruses have been basically stopped in their tracks, which is really good to hear. So vitamin C is an antioxidant. It's great for helping reproduce collagen. It does a lot of things, but that's a very, very high dose, and they're doing it intravenously because someone's in an acute situation. So we want to encourage people to start increasing their vitamin C. So everybody thinks of vitamin C being in oranges. I don't really want everybody eating a lot of oranges because oranges are high in sugar. And one of the things I want to explain is sugar actually causes more inflammation. So oranges are good, like an orange, but not four or five and not drinking a gallon of orange juice a day. I don't even encourage people drinking a glass of orange juice. A small glass of orange juice is about equivalent to 12 oranges. Go buy a bag of oranges and hand squeeze them and see how much you get out of them. You don't need to be eating a bag of oranges. So we need to look at our vitamin C's from different areas and different foods that have them. The other thing that they're proving right now is vitamin D. They're showing that vitamin D is also reversing these viruses. Vitamin D, most of y'all should know this by now, is really good as an immune booster. I'm very hesitant sometimes on vitamin D supplements. I think some of them are made synthetically. I think the chemicals that they use in them to preserve them are worse off for you. But I am going to tell you naturally, you can get vitamin D naturally with 15 minutes of direct sunlight. No SPF. I'm anti-SPF. I'm sure there's some dermatologists out there flipping out that I said that. But there's just too many chemicals in SPF. I think that's why we have a vitamin D deficiency, is because we are not eating enough good fat. You have to have cholesterol to convert vitamin D. So if you're on a statin, good luck, because you need that cholesterol to do that conversion. But if you feel like you live a pretty healthy lifestyle, you got to eat a lot of good fats. Those are those avocados, those olive oils, those nuts, the olives, seeds, things like that. Then go outside, no SPF, tank top on preferably, put your arm out in the sun for 15 minutes, boom, you've got your vitamin D. If you're one of those that can't absorb it, there are some people that have an enzyme where it's difficult for them to absorb that vitamin D, then my other favorite supplement that I prefer is cod liver oil. I have said that in multiple of my podcasts. I love cod liver oil because it kills two birds with one stone. It's got your omegas from the fish oil. It's got your vitamin D, and it's got your vitamin A. Cod, for some reason, that oil actually has those naturally, and that has been used for centuries. And if I go back with the old-fashioned Little Rascal kind of black and white movies, you always saw someone pour something in a spoon and shove it in their mouth. That's cod liver oil. We have been using it forever. Grandma knew what she was talking about. So if I was going to have you do a synthetic or supplement vitamin D, I would really push you more to do the cod liver oil, because that omega is that cholesterol that you need for that conversion of vitamin D. Do you understand? So what they're finding out, though, is that vitamin D, even with the vitamin A and the C, is making phenomenal results with the COVID-19. You're not hearing it a lot in the news because, of course, we're going to deal with more pharmaceutical. But if you're kind of looking for preventative, this is the route to go. Now, the other thing that you're hearing, and I did notice that they're now pronouncing it in the news, is melatonin. Everybody thinks of melatonin for sleep, but actually melatonin helps with inflammation in the lung. Now, here is a problem that we're having. It's a catch-22. We're all inside. We're all doing homeschooling off of the internet, the iPads. But the problem is the blue screens on our TVs, our laptops, our phones, our iPads actually deplete the melatonin in our brain. That's why you're noticing, if you're on your iPad or your kid's on your iPad or iPhone or whatever electronic device, I'm going to use that word, even TV that have these blue screens, you may have noticed that they're not going to bed till about 1-2 in the morning. They're up all night. They can't sleep. Well, that's because those screens deplete that melatonin. So if you really want to help somebody that you want to prevent this, reduce your screen time as much as you can, or try to get one of those blue light filters. It's the blue light that's doing it. and you can buy them anywhere. We put them on all of our electronic devices. And I've even talked to an ophthalmologist. They're seeing that these screens are actually destroying our eyes, and you'll start noticing people more have visual and eye issues. So reduce your screen time as much as you can. Berberine is another thing that we're finding, and that's because berberine supports the gut. And we'll be doing another podcast showing the gut and the lung relationship and how the gut may be the answer of preventing this from affecting us. Zinc is another one. I'm big on zinc. I personally like to do more holistic, natural zinc and not buy off the shelf, man-made supplement zinc. A lot of times those come from rock. I'm more of whole food. The reason I'm more for whole food is you have to have certain enzymes to make these minerals work. So I like zinc from the liver, and so for us we use zinc liver chelate. Mushrooms. Mushrooms are phenomenal. I have not done one yet, but there is a cancer podcast I'm going to do, but they have shown that mushrooms such as turkey tail, lion's mane, shiitake, maitake, they're having anti-cancer effects, which they're also now starting to see is dealing with an anti-inflammatory. It's helping with a lot of other disease processes. So you know me, I love my bone broths, and I'm like, why not go ahead and do a bone broth soup with some of these great mushrooms? I find that shiitake and maitake is so much easier to get in a grocery store, but if you can get turkey tail, there's so much research on turkey tail and lion's mane that does wonderful, wonderful things for the immune system. Go for it. If you can find a supplement, one of my favorites, I'm going to plug it because it's the only one I know, is Standard Process has an Epimmune, which uses these mushrooms. There's also another supplement where it's Ganoderma and shiitake. So those are the ones that I do know that they sell, and they use the real mushrooms. It's, I don't know how you get synthetic. The other one that we're encouraging people to do is a probiotic, and they found that they really like Bacillus subtilis because it helps with that IgA factor that I mentioned at the very beginning that starts in the mouth and goes down the gut. Because remember, we're starting to see a link possibly there. And so if we're starting to see a link there, we just want to go ahead and encourage and rebuild that gut. And you're going to see that probably in the future. Gut repair, gut repair, gut repair. Probiotics, probiotics, probiotics. Y'all, I'm not a big fan of Activia. I'm sorry. I hope I don't offend that company. But there are tons of different types of probiotics. And so for each dysfunction that you have in the body, like someone who has H. pylori, they can't take a regular probiotic. It has to be a specific strain to stop H. pylori. So for this, they're finding it's the Bacillus subtilis that's helpful. Elderberry. I can't say enough about elderberry. I usually like to do elderberry and echinacea together. I used to use SambuGuard as a company I liked. But if you do elderberry, there's a place here where there's someone who grows them and makes her own elderberry syrup, and I love it. But I have to emphasize, it's got to be organic. There cannot be any form of pesticides on it, because one of the problems with your snack foods and everything, and y'all make fun of GMOs, but when you spray a pesticide, it doesn't matter how many times you wash it, it usually will get soaked into the skin. So especially anything that has the pits in it, like strawberries, i.e. everybody gets strawberry allergies, peanuts, even like avocados. When you spray in there, it gets absorbed in those little pockets and goes through the skin. And therefore, you're eating that. Well, it's a foreign chemical. And so your body will pick that up. And what surrounds foreign chemicals first? Cytokines. What are cytokines? Inflammation. So you get inflamed. And then all of a sudden these white blood cells come in, these macrophages and neutrophils, and they come to attack and eat. And if you have too much of it, that you don't have enough white blood cells, then you cause an inflammatory response, which would be like an allergic reaction, a rash, a breakout, something of that nature. Does that kind of make a little bit more sense if I kind of break it down like that? If it doesn't, please email me and let me know. I have a lot of different analogies. So if you're going to do elderberry syrup, make sure it comes from a company that does not use pesticides, does not use synthetic fertilizers or chemicals on it. But elderberry is like the number one herb I've ever known that kills viruses. So there's not a lot. Lemons do too. So food-wise, we like to encourage people to consume more lemons and more garlic. Lemon and garlic are great virus killers. I cannot say that it's going to do this for COV. There are not any studies out for it. They are working right now on nutritional studies for this virus. So I'm really excited that people are thinking outside the box. But those are two things that they're looking at as well. Stinging nettle is another one, and I do love stinging nettle. It is hard to find, so I found that it's easier to find nettle, N-E-T-T-L-E, in tea form. And I think nettle is much easier to consume in a tea form, and you don't have to worry about over-consuming it. But nettle is one of them. Dandelion roots, great. I thought about dandelion the other day. I went to the grocery store. I couldn't believe it. They sold dandelion leaves. They are great for lowering blood pressure and for cleaning out the liver. And if you've heard some of my past podcasts, liver is very important for detoxing. And so let's say you are obese and you're over that BMI and you're like, this is it. I want to live an anti-inflammatory lifestyle. I'm going to start eating healthy and losing weight. Well, as those fat cells start to shrink, toxins will start to come out. And so you will feel horrible. You will feel like you've had a cold or flu, or you will have these weird hormonal shifts or changes, or you will get headaches every day. This is what we call detoxing. And the only thing that's going to pull that out is your liver. Really, it's your liver and your kidneys, because you got to pee it out or poop it out or breathe it out. So, or it comes out on your skin. Hence, that's why sometimes when we lose weight, all of a sudden acne pops up. That's an inflammatory process. So we like to encourage people to eat foods that help support the liver and detox the liver. And dandelion leaves are one of them. And I'm excited now that we can see them in the grocery store. Okay, so other foods that we're wanting to encourage to get at the grocery store to help with that anti-inflammatory diet is okra. Okra is really good for the intestines. It provides mucus. It clears things out. Asparagus. Asparagus is phenomenal for kidney and kidney issues and keeping your kidneys clean and functional. We try to have asparagus quite often, 2 or 3 times a week. Leeks, they're seeing leeks are very good. My favorite is a celery and leek soup that you make with coconut oil and chicken broth. It takes not even 10 minutes for you to make it and everybody eats it. I believe I have a recipe on my website, drsherryjohnson.com, on making this leek soup. Garlic, onions, kombucha. Now, kombucha is good because it's a natural probiotic, but here's the problem, guys. I've been to the grocery store. I pulled out some kombucha because my kid's like, hey, can I have some? It does have a funky taste. You have to kind of get used to it if you're not used to that. And I turn around and there's like 38 grams of sugar. And this is where my blood sugar cleanse came in, because I try to teach my patients how to read a food label. There are real kombucha drinks out there with no sugar or less sugar. You don't really want to have anything over 7 or 8 grams, to be honest with you, per serving. So watch out for that if you get it. Sauerkraut is the way I go. I buy sauerkraut and I put it in almost anything. But that is another probiotic for you. And there is a fermented coconut yogurt. I believe it's called Koyoi. And I won't lie to you, I love it. And I kind of got my mom to eat it and she actually liked it. But that's another way that you can go. All right, so we're going to do anti-inflammatory diet. We're going to decrease our sugar intake, reduce your carb intake. That's no breads, crackers, pastas, rice. I actually encourage, and so does another physician up in New York that did this seminar, no grains right now. And I know grains are good for you, but the problem is it does have a higher carb intake. At this point, we need more antioxidant free radical attackers. And those are going to be your fruits, your vegetables. We also want to encourage no dairy. And I love my yogurt, I won't lie to you, but the problem is sugar and dairy actually form more mucus in the body. And you definitely don't want any more mucus if you're worried about having an upper respiratory lung issue, if you're having sinuses, or you're having allergy issues. Even though yogurt has good probiotics in it, it does have lactose, and lactose is a form of sugar. And so we're encouraging people to reduce that. So this is the time, and this is the perfect season for it. You can't ask for anything better. This is where you're going to get your beets, your beet leaves, your dandelion leaves, your kales, your green leafy vegetables. Reduce your fruit consumption. You should really only have two servings a day, and that's going to be the size of your fist or in your hand. Increase your good fats, your omegas, your nuts, your seeds, your olive oils, your coconut oils. You know, coconut is great. Coconut oils are good for anti-inflammatories. You want to do a bullet coffee where you use MCT oil in your coffee, go for it. Be really careful with coffee though, guys. Coffees have mold in it. So try to find not just an organic brand, but try to find a brand where they test it for the least amount of mold. Mold is really harmful on the lungs, the body, and the immune system. So that's a little note on the side. Now, that's kind of the diet we want you to have. I kind of listed the supplements. If you need more information, I have a video that explains it. It's on my website, drsherryjohnson.com or cahc.biz. And underneath it, I list some supplements and things that may help, not cure, not stop, may help your immune system for this virus. Now, we're going to go into testing real quick before I end this podcast. So there's tests out there. Obviously, they're doing the spit. They're doing the, Q-tip up the nose, which hurts. And it should hurt if you're getting a real test. If it does not hurt, it has not been done correctly, and you may not get a correct result. But to make this transition, they're coming out right now, and they already had it, but the antibody test to see if you maybe already had this virus, maybe you didn't have signs and symptoms, but you had the antibodies for it. So at the time when I had this research, they were still doing it by blood draw, but now they have approved a finger prick, and they're in the process of trying to make multiple of these tests, which I love the idea of that. To just get a fingerprint, you put your finger on it, it says if you have the antibodies for it. Now we're looking for these IgG and the IgM. Remember, Ig means immunoglobulins, and you have a whole bunch of them that attack different parts of the body. You have your IgA, your IgG, your IgM, and these are gonna tell you if you already have the immune system that's fighting this. Different clinics are now offering them, different labs, but they should be out in a week. And this may be the new thing to get everybody back into society again. I hope this lecture was helpful. I try to make it as quick as I can. I try to break it down as much as I could for you guys, but this is basically what we know. I should be getting another webinar from a hospital giving us a little bit more detail, and I'm hoping to get that out for you guys. Thank you for listening, and again, as I always say, please take ownership of your health. This is your time now to change your lifestyle and change your diet so you don't have to be a victim to what Mother Nature produces. Have a great day and stay healthy.